ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srila Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, there we go. The verse is 7.5.11. Shri Prahlad Uvacha Parashvas Chit Asadgraha Humsam Yan Maya Yakrita Vimohita Diham Dristas Tasmai Bhagavate Namaha Parashvas chit yasad graha Umsam yan maya yakrita Vimohita diyam drishtas Tasmai bhagavate namaha Please chant. Shri Prahlad Uvacha Parashvaschetasadgraha Humsam yanmayakrita Mohita dinandrishtas Tasmai bhagavate namaha
Shri Prahlad Uvacha Parashvaschetasadgraha
One more.
Shri Prahlad Uvacha Parashvas Chetasadgraha Pumsam Yanmaya Yakrita Vimohita Diyam Drishtas Tasmai Bhagavate Namaha
Together? Shri Prahlad Uvacha Prahlad Maharaj replied An enemy Swa, a kinsman or friend Cha, also Hum Sam Persons Yat, of who Maya Ya, by the external energy Krita, created Vimohita, bewildered Vyam, of those whose intelligence Vishra, practically experienced Tasmai, unto him
Should we read the translation together? Yeah. Prahlad Maharaj replied, Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. External energy has created the distinctions of my friend and my enemy by deluding the intelligence of man. Actually experiencing this. From authoritative sources. Purport.
As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vidya Vina Sampanne Brahmani Gavi Hastini Suni Chaiva Swapakecha Pandita Samadarshinaha. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater, outcast. Panditaha. Those who are actually learned, the equipoised, advanced devotees who have full knowledge of everything, do not see any living entity as an enemy or friend. Instead, with broader vision, they see that everyone is part of Krishna, as confirmed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jivira Surupa Haya Krishna Krishnare Nitya Das. Every living entity, being part of the Supreme Lord, is meant to serve the Lord, just as every part of the body is meant to serve the whole body.
As servants of the Supreme Lord, all living entities are one, but a Vaishnava, because of his natural humility, addresses every other being entity as Prabhu. A Vaishnava sees other servants to be so advanced that he has much to learn from them. Thus he accepts all other devotees of the Lord as Prabhus, masters. Although everyone is a servant of the Lord, one Vaishnava servant, because of humility, sees another servant as his master. Understanding of the master begins from understanding of the spiritual master. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the benediction of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement.
One of the ladies up to you? I want to get into the habit of just passing it down.
The spiritual master is to be honored as much as the Supreme Lord, because he is the most confidential servitor of the Lord. This is acknowledged in all revealed scriptures and followed by all authorities. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master, who is a bona fide representative of Sri Hari Krishna. The spiritual master, the servant of God, is engaged in the most confidential service of the Lord, namely delivering all the conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya, in which one thinks, this person is my enemy and that one is my friend. Actually, the Supreme Personality of God is the friend of all living entities, and all living entities are eternal servants of the Supreme Lord. Oneness is possible through this understanding, not through artificially thinking that every one of us is God or equal to God. The true understanding is that God is the Supreme Master, and that all of us are servants of the Supreme Lord, and are therefore on the same platform. This had already been taught to Prahlad Maharaj by his spiritual master Narada, but Prahlad was nonetheless surprised by how a bewildered soul thinks one person his enemy and another his friend.
As long as one adheres to the philosophy of duality, thinking one person a friend and another an enemy, he should be understood to be in the clutches of Maya. The Mayavadi philosopher who thinks that all living entities are God and are therefore one is also mistaken. No one is equal to God. The servant cannot be equal to the master. According to the Vaishnava philosophy, the master is one and the servant are also one. But the distinction between the master and the servant must continue even in the liberated stage. In the conditioned stage, we think that some living beings are our friend, whereas others are enemies, and thus we are in duality. In the liberated stage, however, the conception is that God is the master and that all living entities, being servant of God, are one.
Shubhavarki. So, this is the conversation between Shanda and Amarka and Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad's getting himself in trouble, is what's happening. He is... He's explaining... They're trying to teach him this philosophy of diplomacy and duplicity and political science, how to defeat one's enemy and categorize your friends, and how to get the most out of every encounter, exploiting even your positive relationships to get ahead in the world. And in that way, Shanda and Amarka are actually not very different from many teachers that we find in the modern age. This is how to get ahead in the world, to take advantage of people, to defeat your enemy, and find out who you can get some help from, and then stomp on them when you get the chance. And this is the science of making enemies and friends. And Prahlad is just not interested in it. If someone is very expert at this nowadays, they're a great person. They achieve a very high position in business. I know it was true when I was in the military that people were always competing for advancement. There were a certain number of spots. It's like a pyramid, and there are a certain number of spots in higher management. And basically, you have to use your friendships and make your enemies in order to advance up the ladder. And someone who was able to do this was considered very great and was promoted easily. And someone who wasn't able to do this was a sucker, and they're a failure. And this is our modern conception. As I said, Prahlad is just not interested in this. So he responds. And he responds with the philosophy that's in this... first he responds by this verse, which is he offers his respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because nothing that we do, no words we speak, no endeavor we undertake, no actions we perform will be auspicious without the blessings and the invocation of God. Nothing we do can be successful in the eyes of God without invoking his blessings and the blessings of his devotees. And so we find that Prahlad Maharaj, first, before even speaking to his teachers to respond to them, he offers his respectful obeisances. And this is echoes across the writings of the Vaishnava saints in all of Srila Prabhupada's books. In all the writings of the Vaishnava saints, we always find an invocation invoking the blessings of Guru, the Vaishnavas, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, actually, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami actually offers his obeisances to his audience. People he's teaching. He's teaching you about Chaitanya Charitamrita. You don't know anything about Lord Chaitanya. And he is offering his obeisances to you before you've even read the book, just by you approaching the subject matter. And so he is invoking that blessing in that way. So what he responds is that God is the creator of everyone. And so the living entities are one in that way. There is qualitatively no distinction between one living entity and another. All are servant. And so there's no question of enmity or envy between one living entity and another. Categorizing as this one is my friend and this one is my enemy is a conditioned state. It's a fallen state. And so we can apply that in our own, like Mother Nanda was telling us the other day, that we should be looking where to apply these things in our own life every time we read these things. And if that's what we find ourselves doing, even in the association of devotees, that this one I like and this one I don't like, and he's my enemy and I'm always fighting with him, and this one I'm friends with, and that's conditioning, and that's it's impure consciousness. So he's explaining that we're all created by God. We are servant to all. Everyone is Prabhu, and I'm Das. And this philosophy sort of gets him into trouble. And he ends the verse, he's saying, I have previously heard it from authoritative sources. So the topic of this class is Prahlad Maharaj. I didn't actually have a verse. I chose this verse out of all the verses because this is one of the places where Prahlad Maharaj sort of, in a sense, gets himself into trouble by speaking this truth, this Vedic knowledge. So this is like an essential rejection that Prahlad Maharaj has for his Rakshasa family, for his father's ideas, and for the philosophy of his teachers, that there are no friends or no enemies. We're all servants of Vishnu. So we're going to talk about the story of Prahlad Maharaj. Many of you probably know the story, know all the details inside and out. And I will encourage myself and you to, again, enter into them as we talk about them, with the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is exhibiting the behavior of the perfect devotee. When he was studying Srimad Bhagavatam with Gadadhar Pandit, he did not rush to the 10th canto. He was in no sprint to do that, although obviously he had full comprehension of the knowledge of the Bhagavatam. He's the subject of the Bhagavatam. So he listened to the story specifically of Dhruva Maharaj and of Prahlad Maharaj 100 times. 100 times. I mean, I can't say that I've studied them 100 times. 100 times before moving on. He's so moved by the determination of Dhruva Maharaj, by the humility and the faith exhibited by Prahlad Maharaj. And we're going to talk about that faith because that's the section that we're in and why Prahlad Maharaj has come up. So he's heard from realized sources, authoritative sources. He's speaking about Narada Muni, who is his guru. When Prahlad's mother was pregnant with him, Hiranyakashipu, his father, everybody knows that that's his father, he was off performing austerities. Hiranyakashipu had great envy for Vishnu, and his brother, Hiranyaksha, had been slain by Vishnu, and he was very angry about this. And he had conquered so much, he was the king of the demons, but he wanted more power, and he wanted to be able to slay Vishnu. And so and to conquer the entire universe. So he went to perform austerities at the Mandara Mountains. He performed austerities by standing on the tips of his toes and raising his arms to the sky, controlling his breathing, controlling his life airs. Very difficult austerities, and he performed these for 100 celestial years, which to our brain is just an unfathomable amount of time. It's an unfathomable amount of time to sit still. I mean, I have to stand up like 3 times while I'm chanting japa. I probably chain switches since 4 or 5 times while I'm giving this class. And he held this level of austerity concentrated his consciousness and his willpower and gave him a mystical energy that is available for the living entity through that kind of yoga system. And he became immensely powerful. And he was gathering this strength inside of himself for his actually evil purposes. I mean, literally just personified evil purposes. At a certain point, his body was even being eaten by ants and worms, and there was nothing but bones. And he was still able, by his force of his will, to keep his life air circulating in his bones. Mystical kind of flames were like emitting from the force of his austerity and were heating all of the planetary systems. He's actually changing the climate. I mean, global warming, like, of the universe. And he is... And it's frightening people. I mean, even to the point that demigods, or to speak of normal people, demigods are frightened. They don't know what to do about this. But they know that his wife is pregnant and she is unprotected. So they kidnap her. They arrest her. And the idea is that they take her to a secret place and they're going to wait until she gives birth to this child because he's already so powerful. He's such a demon. And his son may be even more powerful than him. So we'll wait until this child is born and we will kill it. I guess it was kind of an abortion, actually, although they were going to wait until the child was born. They were trying to do the needful. So they took her like this. Now, Narada Muni kind of arrives on the scene. As he does, if you read the Bhagavatam, you'll see that a lot of times, like, Narada Muni will, almost inexplicably sometimes, just kind of show up. And I think we talked about it earlier in the semester, that the whole Bhagavatam is sometimes seen as a glorification of Narada Muni, because Narada Muni is the guru of Veda Vyas who authored the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so lots of stories have this interjection by Narada Muni. And actually, in the Bhagavatam, he's the one relating the story. He's actually telling a story about his own disciple, Prahlad. So Narada Muni shows up, and he says that... He actually empathizes with him. It's really interesting. He says that if you're right about this child, then you stand to lose everything. You stand to lose your residences, your power, your very lives. And for a demigod, what they stand to lose is a lot more than what we stand to lose. Some of us don't have anything. My car has like 14 dents in it. You know, but like they have incredibly beautiful residences, wonderful powers gifted to them by the Supreme Lord for the administration of the universe. They have brilliant intelligence and bodily beauty. And they stand to lose all of this. So Narada Muni said that you will lose all these things, but I'm here to tell you that you're wrong. This child is a powerful devotee of Krishna. He's a powerful devotee of Vishnu, and he's worthy of your obeisances. And it's instructive that the way the demigods responded to that is that they immediately accepted his conclusion. We can hear the words of a sadhu even today, right, and think, well, this person's like a, you know, that. I mean, they're renounced, they're sannyasi, you know, what do they know about material life? They give us an instruction, I mean, you know, we consider it, reconsider it, reconsider the reconsideration, I don't know. Okay, I'll follow, but maybe like half of it because... So the demigods immediately surrendered. They were very pious. And they accepted that this is a Mahabhagavata. They offered obeisances to the child in the womb of his mother. They circumambulated her, and with love and affection, they turned her over to Narada Muni for his protection. So he took her to his ashram. He gave her instructions. He instructed her in the science of bhakti yoga, about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, about devotional service. He was speaking to her, but he was also speaking very deliberately to the child in the womb who heard him. This is kind of a mysterious thing to me anyway when I hear it. Like, how does a child in the womb hear? And so I have heard some classes on, I sought classes on this to try to figure out what's going on here. And so there may be, you know, I mean, it's a Narada Muni has mystical powers, and he can certainly communicate with any living entity. But also we know just from our own experience that a child, when they are exposed to anything at a very young age, it frames their being for their entire life. Sometimes it's difficult to see how this is true in a positive sense, although we do see people with good parents, you know, sometimes have, you know, good values and become upstanding people. But it's really easy to see in the negative sense. If a child is abused or injured or their trust is taken advantage of at a very young age, you can see the damage that causes. Everyone, I'm sure, has experience with this. So children are very malleable at a very young age. And so he's speaking to him in the womb, teaching him this devotional service. He's already a great soul. So he instructs, he gives him instructions. So, meanwhile, Hiranyakashipu is still performing austerities. Yes? Oh, a really interesting question. Yes. So while she's being instructed by Narada, she actually takes on these devotional qualities, and she gleams with bhakti. When she returns home, this becomes covered over, because this is the power of association. It's a very instructive point in the story, that when she's in front of Narada and hearing from a pure devotee, she is so much enraptured by the stories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She sees the wisdom and the philosophy. When she's back with her husband, she loses it. It's dangerous. Yeah. So it's a good question. So Hiranyakashipu, because his motivation is to become the lord of all lords. And when he comes out of his austerities, he is unbelievably powerful, unimaginably. And he takes over everything. He becomes the lord. He conquers Indra. He takes over all their residences. He usurps everything in the universal government. So, Prahlada is born. The mother and child are returned to Hiranyakashipu. And Prahlada gets older, but he never forgets about what he learned in the womb. He never forgets these lessons, this science of Krishna Bhakti. So, he is being instructed at a very young age by this Shandanamarka, who he's speaking to. The person, when it says Prahlada Maharaj replied, he's replying to the Shandanamarka. They are the sons of his father's priest, family priest, Shukracharya, who's a personality you'll see many times in the Bhagavatam as you read it. And he's replying to them. They are instructing him, and they're teaching him this science, which he is defeating, which Prabhupada defeats in the purport. So this gets him into trouble when he speaks out like this. He was taken to see his father, and his father set him on his lap and was very affectionate towards him, and even bathed his face with his tears of affection. Hiranyakashipu is a great demon. He's crying because of how much he loves this boy. And he asks him, you know, basically, like, what did you learn at school today? You know, which is apparently a question that goes back, like, really, really far. So Prahlad doesn't want to talk about what he learned at school. He said, these are stupid things, and he talks about that how worship of Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that this is the highest knowledge. And Hiranyakashipu is enraged. Remember, he feels betrayed by Vishnu has killed his brother. He has envy for Vishnu. He has great pride in his own power. He wants to be the Lord. He finds himself to be a worthy competitor to the Lord. And so he is enraged by this, and he throws him on the ground. I mean, a five-year-old child. Like, imagine, like, I'm sitting here in this chair. It's not even that high of a chair. And if I had a five-year-old boy sitting on my lap, and while he's trusting me and looking at me with affection, I throw him on the marble. None of you would probably ever talk to me again. Like, it's a horrible thing. It's a bad thing to do. You know, it's awful. And I'm not as strong as Hiranyakashipu. I'm not sitting as high as he was. And he chucked him. His own son. He's disgusted by this idea. So he chewed out the teachers, and he told them that, what are you teaching this kid? And they're like, oh, we don't know. We don't know how he got this information. So they are asking him here, what pollution has come into your consciousness? How have you begun thinking all of these things that we've never taught you? Where's all this? So they reclaim him, enroll him in school, and eventually it sort of happens again. He's one day, you know, he's been listening, and they think, okay, he sort of understands. He's, like, ready to be presented to his father. They take him, and again, he disappoints because he speaks truthfully, that the highest truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just, this is the faith of a little boy in the face of the most powerful person in the universe who has already demonstrated that he doesn't want to hear this. You know, we can be afraid to say it's a college student on the porch. You know, he's speaking to a person who's directly demonstrated, like, I'm going to kill you if this is what you talk about. Well, he does it. And Hiranyakashipu decides that this child has to be destroyed. He compares him to disease in a body, that you are from my own body, you're from my Rakshasa family, but I can't let this spread. And just like a limb that's diseased is to be hacked off so the rest of the body can live healthily, you have to be killed. Chandanamarga compared him to an axe handle. They say that sometimes when you want to cut down a tree, you take a branch from that tree and use that as the axe handle, affixing the metal to the top. For them, Vishnu was this deadly axe that would kill them, which actually turns out to be true, and Prahlad was the axe handle. In a sense, they actually understand what's happening, because, that's actually correct interpretation, that the Supreme Lord has put this great personality into their family. So, they try to kill him. And it's pretty horrible, actually, when you read the story. I mean, I think if anybody sees cruelty to a child or even hears about it, it's disgusting, right? They're stabbing him. Actually, right there in front of his father. The palace guards come and they try to jam these barbed tridents into the tender parts of his body. He's a five-year-old boy. It's very violent. They can't pierce his skin, though. It's the strangest thing. He is peaceful. Even as he's thrown off the lap of his father, he's very peaceful. He's very shanti. He's got this great faith that I am the servant of Vishnu, and Mare Krishna Rakeke, Rake Krishna Mareke, that if I am, that only if Krishna wants to kill me, then no one in the universe can protect me. And if Krishna wants to protect me, then no one in the universe can kill me. No one can do anything about it. And it's a great statement of faith. And Prahlad is thinking that, well, because in this way, only if I die, it's simply by the will of the Supreme Lord. And so he's completely surrendered. You can do whatever you like with me. So he's always in remembrance of the Lord and very peaceful. This is how it describes his mentality. They're trying to kill him. So that doesn't work. They try a lot of different things. They throw huge boulders on him. They toss him off the top of a mountain. They throw him in boiling oil. What are some other ones? Anybody remember? What's that? They try to burn him. Elephant. They throw him in front of a herd of elephants. They try to stampede him. They give poison to him. Yeah, do you remember what happens with it? He offers it to Krishna. He actually doesn't know it's poison. He just offers it to Vishnu because he won't enjoy anything without offering it. And it becomes... They put him in a hurricane? I don't even remember that. Yeah, I remember the term destructive spells. Yeah, right. So they were firing this like magic at him. Yeah. And they couldn't... pit of snakes, that's right, venomous snakes. All of these things, so all of these like horrible things to, remember, a little boy. And he is always just offering his obeisances to the Supreme Lord, and it's very peaceful during this. It's inconceivable how... I can imagine if someone were to drag you out of the temple room right now to do anything like this. I mean, God, if they were to just touch your arm, you'd probably like spaz, you know? But what to speak of, like, no, there's a pit of snakes out there, and I'm going to chuck you into it. Have a good one, you know? Like, that's... So, but Prahlad is completely surrendered to the will of the Supreme Lord. And in each case, he is fully protected. This enrages and scares Hiranyakashipu and Chandanamarga and the entire Rakshasa dynasty. Because they don't know what's going on. One, Hiranyakashipu has conquered everyone and everything in the entire universe. But he can't kill this little boy. And he can't affect his opinions. This is the fear of the demonic mentality of faith. That faith is a very dangerous thing because people with faith are not so easily manipulated. They're not so easily controlled. They're not so easily exploited. So eventually they actually sort of give up. And Chandan and Marcus say, look, he's going to grow up. He's got plenty of years. Give us a chance to deal with him in school. And they take him back to school. And so they tell him, like, basically you just sit over there, you shut up, and we're going to talk. And so they do. And Prahlad is obedient. He doesn't speak out while they're teaching and they're instructing more of this political science. But when they leave the classroom, like, I mean, have you ever been in a classroom and people leave? Like, the teacher leaves? Like, I don't know what kind of school you guys went to, but immediately, like, mayhem. I mean, the second people go, it's just, like, wild. Throwing things, breaking things. Everyone was very good in school is what I'm getting from your faces. I was not. So he, however, started preaching to his classmates. He was preaching to them. He was speaking to them. the very famous verse we've already, in fact, many of these verses we already did this semester because his instructions are so prominent in our philosophy. The one that begins, Komar Acharya Pragyo, that you should, even though you're very young, you should take up the science of Krishna consciousness and not wait until you are old. So his character, his purity, his faith, the wonder of seeing one of their playmates with this philosophical conviction captured their attention. And so none of this mayhem went on. They all gathered around him and listened to him. And because he was empowered by his guru, they were all just chanting and dancing. They were all absorbing themselves in this philosophy. They were giving up the tenets of their demonic family, the things that they've been taught. Their convictions changed because children have questions about the world that aren't answered by stupid ideas about friends and enemies and about you got to get a job when you grow up. And you know, these things are kind of depressing. But Prahlad was speaking the answers to these questions that burn in the heart of especially young children. And they were taken with this. He was like a desire tree, that he was just giving them what they wanted. In fact, he was better than a desire tree. Devotees are better than desire trees. You may have heard this before, because desire tree gives you what you want. But the conditioned soul doesn't, we don't know what we want. I have no idea. Some people are so covered over, they don't even know what their false ego wants. And so, like, you can't even satisfy your senses, because I can't even make a decision. But Prahlad Maharaj is giving the relief from this burning fire. He is giving Vedic knowledge. And he's 5 years old. It's quite impressive. And he's converting all of his classmates. So his faith is starting to spread like a fire. In fact, it turns out that Hiranyakashipu was right in one sense, that he was this kind of infection that was spreading. And his classmates were becoming moved by his words about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And his faith was being given to them. Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangota Bhajana Kriya. It's the basis of our entire philosophy, the basis of all our progress in devotional service. I think Kalakanta Prabhu last week, was speaking about this verse where we get faith and then the association of devotees, engagement in devotional activities, removal of impurities in the heart, steadiness, right? So this progression of devotional service, that the basis is faith. The first step is faith. But it's not that faith evaporates and you move on to sadhusanga. Faith increases and accompanies sadhusanga. Faith increases because you take up bhajana kriya. Then bhajana kriya has its effects and it increases. You see anartha navritti, and shraddha also again increases. Nishta, we become steady. As this faith increases and increases, it leads us to the highest levels, the highest position of servitude, of love of Godhead, and eventually Krishna prema. Bhajana kriya is, bhaj means worship. So bhajana kriya means activity. So bhajana kriya, the activities of worship. So when we get the association of sadhus, we get engaged in the activities of worship. Because we're hanging out with them. Just like all these people that Mother Chaitanya invited for the weekend, if they come, they're going, or the people that are, if there's a game this weekend maybe, if they're parking the car, they're going to get engaged in devotional service. Because they'll come here to chant with the 12-hour kirtan. So at this point, he's converted his classmates. Shun and Amarka are really, they're scared. They're in trouble, okay? They screwed up. Like, they got told to eliminate this philosophy, and instead it's reversed. Now it's like their entire class. We have hired you only to teach these people, these kids, something, and instead they're learning the exact opposite of what you're supposed to teach them. Like, they're fired, right? So they go to Hiranyakashipu. We don't know what's, we're out of control. Your son is out of control. And Hiranyakashipu is in a rage. He's in a rage now. Now he's decided to kill Prahlad himself. This is the moment of prophecy. Vishnu had spoken like this when the demigods approached him, that you have to do something about this demon. He said that his son, Prahlad, is my great devotee. And if he touches him, then I will destroy him. And so he, at this time, Hiranyakashipu came to kill Prahlad. And he was just raging in a fit, and he's yelling and screaming. And where is this Vishnu? This Vishnu you're always talking about, where is he? And Prahlad says, he's everywhere. I mean, he's inside of everything. He's everywhere, everywhere. He can't see the Supreme Lord, but Prahlad can see him everywhere. And so this is the argument sometimes of an atheist. They'll say, well, where is God? If there's a God, then where is he? You know, which is kind of an arrogant mentality that God should sort of submit because I point and appear. If there's a God, he should come out of that door right now. See what happened? Didn't come out of the door. So, right? It's arrogant. In fact, it would be arrogant to do that to one of you. Rupa Chandra doesn't exist if he doesn't get up and walk out the door right now. Right? I mean, it's arrogant. So what to speak of somebody in such a position? So he doesn't see. He speaks about this pillar. But the pillar is just an example of this particular argument. Of where is God then? Is he here? Is he there? I mean, he is here. So on his way, he draws his sword and he approaches Prahlad to strike. Again, just a little child. He's coming to cut him down. And on his way by, he just rage punches this pillar. And this incredible sound emits from there, this deep roar, and it just vibrates the entire universe. And it's a sound that no one has ever heard before. And the pillar is shaking and rumbling. And from this pillar, we know, comes Lord Nrsimhadev. He's a very fearsome form. His mane expands the dimensions of his face. His shoulders and chest are broad. His waist is thin. He has many arms with conch, lotus, disc, club. And he's... What's that?
Golden eyes.
I said conch. Yeah, sorry. What's that?
Golden eyes.
Golden eyes. Like, yeah, like molten gold. Yeah. Anybody remember anything else about his form? Yeah, you both said the same thing, yeah. And his pointy teeth and nails. Well, you said pointy teeth and nails. He said his tongue was slashing back and forth like a sword. His, what's that?
Tongue was sharp like a razor.
Yeah. His mouth appeared like a mountain cave.
There's all kinds of demigods flying in airplanes around
to see this form. Oh man, it's described his entire body was touching the sky. So I mean, it's such a massive form to just like expand into the sky to do battle with Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu is stunned by this form. What is this thing? This half man, half lion. It has all these natural weapons and all these other arms. He's stunned by it, and he thinks that no one can stop me, even in the face of just death. Personified, he thinks I'll attack this form. So he runs to strike. He disappears into the, those who were watching saw him kind of disappear into the effulgence because the Lord blazed as he entered this battle. This incredible effulgence just dwarfed the form of Hiranyakashipu. It looked like a moth flying into a fire. Well, let's talk about it. I can Well, he was really strong. It's in this particular fight they talk about how his body can't be pierced by Indra's thunderbolts. He's extremely tight, strong. He flies in the air and he's on the ground. What, Gopal? Right. Yeah, land, sea, or air, inside the house, out of the house. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Terrifying person, right? And we can't imagine. It was like, I mean, imagine how scared you would be if there was like a tank outside and it just like aimed the barrel at this room. You know, we're talking about Hiranyakashipu who would like eat this tank. So he disappears into this effulgence of the Lord. He's battling with him and it's described as he's flying above him and he's fighting him on the ground that actually sometimes he had to close his eyes because he became terrified of this form through the course of the battle. He became terrified. At one point, he thought he was doing okay because he was caught and then released. And he thought, oh, the Lord cannot hold me. He didn't think the Lord. He thought, this person can't hold me. Nobody can stop me. But, I mean, if you've ever seen a cat or had a cat, This is what they do. I mean, you catch, let them go, play with them, catch them again. This is what cats do. That's how cats... So the Lord was engaging in this for play. So he... So eventually he grabbed him up and he threaded this duality of his benediction that you were talking about, where I can't be killed, land, sea, or air, by man or animal, any creature created by you, Brahma, during the day or the night. And he threaded the entire thing. He took him at twilight to the door, like the threshold, and put him on his lap. In all these ways, he wasn't in the land, sea, or air. He wasn't killed by a man or animal. He wasn't killed by any weapons because it was the Lord's nails. And he tore him asunder. And he's very violent. I mean, he pulled out his heart and threw it on the ground like a bloody water balloon. And he took out his...
intestines.
What's that? Yeah, and he took the intestines out and wrapped them around. And he was just roaring. He was so mad. So then all Hiranyakashipu's army came in and he killed all of them too. I mean, this place is just a bloodbath. He's raging. And even after the killing of Hiranyakashipu, he can't be pacified. He's just roaring and scaring everyone, frightening every single person in the universe. The demigods descend, and they are trying to offer prayers. Well, I guess they were already descended, as Gorlila told us. They got knocked to the ground. So Brahma comes to offer prayers, and it's just not effective. You know, nothing pacifies him. So the demigods, in turn, try... Vayu, Vamanadeva, Indradeva, nothing works. The Gandharvas and Apsaras are singing, but nothing can pacify the angry heart of the Lord. He's furious. And he's just radiating these like almost like punishing rays that are difficult to even be in the presence of. So, and he's roaring this sound that's shaking the entire universe, but they're in the same room with him. I mean, it's, you know, putting your head up to the speaker. It's loud. So... Then they asked Lakshmi Devi, who's his own wife. You're his consort. Can you, you know, do something? And she walks in and it's just, nope. I don't know who did this. I don't know who made him mad, but he's like really mad. So eventually Brahma comes to Prahlad and says that you should approach him. Everybody knows why Nrisimha Dev incarnated. Of course Prahlad understands the purpose of the Lord. But he doesn't jump over his Param Guru, Brahma, who's the guru of Narada. He doesn't jump over him. He doesn't think to rush forward and offer prayers, me first. He waits until he's instructed. And he waits humbly. He's not thinking, well, wrap it up, guys, because you know who the star is here. He's waiting patiently. So they encourage him to come forward, and he approaches the Lord. This is what's really fascinating about this, for me anyway, is that this is the same furious form of the Lord. He's roaring. He's effulgent. He has all of his weapons. He's in his angriest mood. He's shaking the entire universe by his roar and by his body. When Hiranyakashipu saw this form, he closed his eyes in fear. He approached with anger as a competitor. Prahlad approached the very same form. The very same form, but with a different mood. Again, Mare Krishna Rake Ke, Rake Krishna Mare Ke, whatever you want, Lord. He was just thinking, here is my Lord. He is present before me. And I've been told to offer prayers. Let me go and see him. So he walked into the same effulgence, the same dangerous atmosphere. And a great joy sprouted in his heart when he saw him. Prahlada Lada Dayane gives great joy to Prahlad. And Lord Nrisimhadev was moved by this affection. This is what moves the Lord, not the carrots we offer or any nice song we sing. He has all these things. He made all these things. He gave us the intelligence to offer our prayers and the mouths and the air to speak them. It's the affection with which these things are offered. Expertise only matters if it comes with feeling. And so this great gout of feeling coming from Prahlad moved the Lord and calmed him, and the rays receded, and his shuddering stopped, and his roaring calmed. He placed his hand on him, and Prahlad offered prayers. This faith of Prahlad Maharaj is the greatest weapon in all creation. The strongest warrior anywhere in the world who conquered everyone and everything, he was defeated by the faith and humility of a five-year-old boy. It's a David and Goliath story for those of you sort of more familiar with that tradition. But he conquered even the greatest person. So this well-placed, thoughtful, philosophically backed faith is the strongest thing. Because as I was saying before, people with that faith are not easily manipulated. It's just the opposite of the way faith is portrayed in the modern parlance now, where faith is a weakness. It's a crutch. It's for stupid people who are immature and can't deal with the mysteries of the world. If we were just a little bit more mature, a little bit more calm, we would understand that it's okay that we don't have answers to some questions and we wouldn't need to believe something is out there. But this is a misunderstanding of faith. And unfortunately, this misunderstanding is sometimes perpetuated by persons with faith that don't have philosophical backing. So persons with real faith, actually strong faith, you can't easily control them or manipulate them. You can't sway them with television commercials. They can't be bought. And so this faith was so important for the society of Hiranyakashipu to stamp out. And ultimately, their attempt to stamp it out, ultimately they were captured. They were destroyed. The entire reverse happened. And this is the power of faith, that even though we have no ability ourselves, even though someone is a very small five-year-old boy, that deep faith calls down the power of Godhead in protection. So I guess that's most of what I would have to say. I think we're almost out of time. Should I go to questions or should we go to the Nrsingha Kravacha? What do you like? Nrsingha Kravacha. Okay, so go to the other verse.
I was gonna say Nrsingha also listened.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's adorable. Did you just close it? Jai. Astanga Yoga Ki Jai. So Prahlad Maharaj, this is in the fifth canto. This is actually before the seventh canto. Prahlad Maharaj sort of shows up, and he is a resident of Jambudvipa, and he's offering prayers. And he offers this prayer called the Nrsingha Kavacha. We don't talk about it as much because it's not like the action pastime. But I think it's a very interesting counterpoint to the verse we read, and it's why I set it up this way. I didn't know if we would make it here. Because the verse that we started with was speaking about the science of enemies and friends. And it is the very rejection that Prahlad Maharaj gave to his family. He refused this philosophy. He rejected it. And it's what caused the entire upheaval. But here, if we read, can you scroll down to the translation? We don't have time. The Sanskrit in the fifth canto is very difficult, and I am not qualified to read it. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Nrsingadeva, the source of all power. O my Lord, who possesses nails and teeth just like thunderbolts, kindly vanquish our demon-like desires for fruitive activity in this material world. Please appear in our hearts and drive away our ignorance, so that by your mercy we may become fearless in the struggle for existence in this material world. So Prahlad is saying that there's no enemy anywhere in the universe to Chandanamarga in terms of living entities. But there are living entities. He told his father this. The only enemy that exists is in your mind. And here, this is the proper prayer to Lord Nrsingadeva. Not that you come and destroy some demon or some person who made me angry yesterday, but that you... This guy cut me off in traffic, so hopefully the Lord appears and just tears his car. But that the Lord will come into our hearts and destroy these enemies. These enemies that are blocking our Krishna bhakti, blocking our relationships with others, and causing us to just suffer so much. And the root of our bondage here in the material world. And Lord Nrsingadeva has the power to destroy these things. And we hear this from an authorized source, Prahlad Maharaj. So there. That's Nrsingha Kavacha. So if there's any questions or comments, I understand it's 8:30, but...
So you mentioned how in normal religious facts, faith is normally weak, and it's actually out the opposite of what real faith is.
Yeah. Oh, I knew this question would come. I was
reading the Bhagavad Gita introduction. Srila Prabhupada mentioned talks about that, oh, that person can change his faith. You know, he can become from a Hindu, he can change his faith to Muslim or something else. But then Srila Prabhupada was talking about eternal dharma, Sanatana Dharma. So can you further explain this difference in the just the faith? Some people can keep changing faith, but what is this eternal faith?
Interesting. So he, Shruti's question is about the difference in religion. Maybe I'll just speak to you because I feel like people are getting into the prasadam thing. So.